low moral fiber.
I don't think you should drink that.
First of all, welcome.
Hello.
Holding it like an inch or two in front of my mouth.
This looks bad for you.
You did it backwards.
All right.
Nonsense. It makes me feel great.
And
that's pretty good.
I do want to know how much it costs per sip.
All right.
Can I keep his head for a souvenir?
I like it.
Hello, everyone in the internet lands. Welcome to the first episode of... This is going great so far. Welcome to the first episode of Men of Low Moral Fiber. My name is Ben Helms, and this is...
Jason Helms. I'm his brother.
My older brother, who actually introduced me to these games many, many, many moons ago when they first came out in like 87. That's probably not true. I was probably 2 years old then. But many moons ago, we used to play these games a lot. We both grew up in California, close to LucasArts, close to George Lucas' literal heart. And yeah, everyone we knew played these games. We played these games all the time. Yeah, Jason, anything more about kind of LucasArts as a whole?
Yeah, we're really at a perfect spot in Marin County where LucasArts was located, Broderbund Software, a lot of those cool old school software companies were located. We had friends whose parents worked at some of them. And that set it up. I mean, I remember we'd go to a garage sale and get the new LucasArts game, you know, 2 months old or something for $5. Because one of our friends' dads brought 30 copies to the garage sale to sell for charity. So that's kind of how we got plugged into these. What we didn't know at the time, I think we just thought, well, probably everybody has a cool game store near them or a cool game company near them, and they like to play their games.
Yeah.
What I didn't realize is that we're right in the middle of a revolution in gaming. I found a really cool article, in fact, recently that Jasper Jules, who's a game theories guy, he studies this all
That's
academically.
Not a real person.
Yeah, Jasper Jules.
Jasper Jules.
Here's the great
That's
thing.
Something that Robin says to Batman.
How many U's do you think are in his last name?
If it's like the measurement, it would be J-O-U-L-E-S?
J-U-U-L.
No, that's not true. This is a fake person.
No,
he has superpowers.
Totally for truth.
All right, what do you say?
Anyway, he's got a new book out called, I think it's called Casual Revolution. But somebody picked that up, and it was all about, like, you know, kids these days with their mobile gaming right. and their...
The JNCO
that's clearly... Games. Clearly not how he talks. Let me make that very clear. When your name is J-U-U-L, you don't talk like that.
No.
But
Crazy
anyway.
English only for J-U-U-L.
Yeah, J-U-U-U-L. Somebody picked up on it and said, you know, that's great. Love you, Jaspers. But here's an interesting thing. I'm actually going to plot out the way that casual gaming went. And I'm going to say that the casual gaming revolution happened in 1987. With a little game called Maniac Mansion.
Ooh, nice.
I thought this was really interesting because, again, these games meant a lot to us, but it's so fun to see that they meant a lot to other people too.
Yeah, and I've thought about this game often for the past 20 years or so, and it's a lot different than I remember it.
Yeah, right?
I think about it, and I didn't do any research on this as far as, you know, before we kind of started this whole adventure, before we've even played the game, but I thought of it as... Also, it's like a new era of gaming, and maybe that's because I was five at the time, and that was gaming to me. But you know, even when I think NES came out a couple years after that, they still held their own on the PC. It wasn't like they went away, even when the new generations of console games came out.
Yep.
So, and I think of Maniac Mansion as even before I went into the research and realized that this was the seminal moment of becoming this new adventure kind of point and click game with the new. Magical scum engine that we'll get more into later.
So cool.
I already thought of it as this new step, this new era, like you said.
Yeah. So let's, before we jump into what a revolution it was, just one more personal kind of note where we each were when this was going on. So I was six when Maniac Mansion came out. There's no way that I played it.
No.
However, I was nine when it got ported to the Nintendo Entertainment System.
Is that where we played it first?
That might have been because I distinctly remember. Okay, you guys got to go play this game. You'll check it out. We'll give you some advice on how to jump into it.
Who's talking? About this? Who's saying that?
Oh, me. I'm sorry. Let me back up. So we'll tell you a little bit more about this game in a second. But one thing you got to know about it is you need a mouse to play this game.
Yeah.
And the second piece of information you need to know about Nintendo is that it doesn't have a mouse.
Right. I remember that.
And this game was so difficult to play because you'd use the little arrow keys to move the cursor around. And it took for freaking ever.
Oh, and it is the least smooth game. Even when you do have a mouse, you're like, oh, I need this thing on the third floor. Give me 5 minutes.
Yep.
To get to the third floor. Click, 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 click. So I can't even imagine doing that without a mouse.
You feel it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
The first LucasArts game I remember playing, though, was the original Monkey Island. And I remember just being blown away by how good the graphics were.
Oh, yeah.
Which is funny now looking back on it, but at the time it just completely blew me away.
I remember the music of the the sword fights. And
yeah.
I remember, I don't know if I thought it was cheesy, but I didn't think it was, I don't know, whatever, you know, Terminator, whatever movie was
right
back then that I saw. Like, I didn't think it was this blockbuster type thing, but I did remember just thinking it was the most, possibly the highest level of video game entertainment you could ever achieve. I was just like awestruck at this.
They nailed it. It had the feeling of like the best Disney cartoons,
right,
the ones
right
where you're really taken into it. You identify with the characters. It had all of that. It had lots of subversive humor that went a little bit too far. We'll talk about it in a second. But you know, wasn't your parents weren't going to take it away from you or anything like that. You could get by with it. And the game that I remember playing, the most, was Day of the Tentacle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, the game that you and I played the most.
Yeah.
And the one that I think age-wise we first really connected on. You were old enough for it, and I was still young enough for them in some ways that I hadn't tried to move on to anything else.
Right. The graphics were a little better than the previous generation, for sure.
Absolutely. And they went a completely different direction with it.
Yeah.
Instead of trying – with Maniac Mansion, you'll see they really are trying this it's cartoony, but every room looks the same. Every room is shot from the same angle. Mm-hmm. It's a system, you know. They don't want there to be any kind of hesitation between you and the world you see represented in front of you. Now, when we get to Day of the Tentacle in our next episode, you're going to see a huge jump in terms of what they're doing with the graphics. It's not just that they're better quality. It's that now each room has, in a sense, a camera set up in it. It's taken from a particular angle. Things have a kind of three-dimensionality to it that's done, you know, simply with shading, same way you would just in a drawing. It's not, you know, some advanced graphics engine. It's just more care is taken into the design in these things and the realization that it doesn't have to be as straightforward. It can be more like a Bugs Bunny cartoon.
Right. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I was just looking at when you're describing the layout, I was like, it basically is a side-scroller, but before side-scrollers really existed.
Yeah.
I think the first side-scroller I think of, and it might have been one of the first, I didn't do research in this other than looking up the date, which is 92, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 4, Turtles in Time, which is probably the arcade that I put more money into than any other arcade.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I ever beat that stupid game, but and that came out for SNES also. But it almost looks like all of the rooms in the mansion are this left-to-right side-scrolling thing.
Absolutely.
Very, very small.
And maybe this is a good time to shift to kind of the context, the original context it came out in. There certainly were side-scrollers back then, and I'd point to Super Mario Brothers.
Oh, true.
You know,
true.
Is out at this point. And there were some others before this. But the ones that it got its inspiration for were the old Sierra King's Quest games.
Oh, yeah.
And King's Quest were kind of similar to this, you know, side-scrolling. There's some kind of action happening on the screen. The big difference is the original King's Quest games, you could not click on things. It was all done through typing. So you would type in walk east, walk north, and you would go out that side of the screen, pick up flower. Now, the really tough part about this, if you've never done these kinds of games, is you have to guess what kinds of verbs you're allowed to use. Also, you sometimes have to guess what the thing is called. So you see a flower there and you say, pick up flower. But what you're supposed to say up is pick up Daisy because you don't know it. But in 3 hours, you're going to get to another game. You're going to get to another flower that's a rose. And the way the game is set up, you can't have two flowers called flower or it's going to say, wait, that flower's not for 3 hours.
Right. There's a different potion or a different puzzle needs to be solved with a Daisy.
Exactly.
And then, by the way, real quick, if anyone listening has played Maniac Mansion or any of these other great LucasArts games, if you want to kind of know, and you know, when we played Maniac Mansion last week, I was kind of like, oh, these graphics are so bad. And like not necessarily aching because, you know, it's still workable. The graphics didn't get in the way of the gameplay at all. But Googling King's Quest 3, which is the one that came out in like 86, right before this, kind of the inspiration for this game graphically, it is just, I can't imagine playing this for more than 10 minutes without just being so frustrated at, hey, look at that square. And the game, assuming that you know that square is obviously a daisy. Like, why wouldn't that square in the grass be a daisy?
Yeah, it's context, you know.
It is rough.
And yet the King's Quest games were a huge improvement on the text-based games that came before them. Little background on me, I actually teach at TCU in Fort Worth, and I teach a class on video games, and we make video games in it, and I've chosen to have the class focus on text-based video games. My students hate that for the first few weeks, and usually they get into it after that. But the reason is it's just so tough and time-consuming if I have the students trying to make their own graphics.
Because these people play Call of Duty and Madden. They know what good graphics look like.
They're going to be annoyed, and there's no way that they could make something as good as Maniac Mansion. Right. That's the other side of it, just in the amount of time they've got. But text-based games, these were a big thing throughout the 80s, and they started in the 70s with a game called Colossal Cave Adventure. It went by a lot of names. Adventure is one of them. But in these games, it's kind of like the way I just described King's Quest, except you wouldn't have anything on the screen. You would just have words describing what you're supposed to be seeing. These games are great. There really are some gems. However, when you compare it to the way games are played now, especially in the difficulty level, it's almost impossible. You had to devote 2 hours just to try and figure out how to navigate the world. Nothing like the way the gaming is now.
Yeah. We can just use your eyes.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So there were a couple games around the time that Maniac Mansion came out, like King's Quest. I think The Uninvited or Deja Vu were out about the same time. And some of them used point and click, and some of them used the typing. But Maniac Mansion was really the first to bring a lot of disparate things together in that you had this inventory, you didn't have to type anything, you had everything on the screen, it was all handy, and it's a huge leap forward. And I think just about every single thing in it, LucasArts did not invent, but just pulled from someone else. Someone else was doing something similar, they were the first to do it all.
Yeah, yeah, true. I mean, if you go back and play like Labyrinth or what is it, Corona's Shift?
Yeah, yeah.
Not that I bust out my Atari 800 and Commodore 64 very often, but even just looking at YouTube videos, which honestly is all I've done in the past 20 years of these games, it's again, a little rough to watch. So you definitely have to dedicate yourself to playing these games. If, like, a little background on me, I play a lot of video games. I have played a lot of video games over the past 20 years. There are games you pick up and they're just very intuitive and you're just like, oh, I press up to go forward and it's first person, or I press X to pass or shoot or whatever. These are not that. I mean, these are just, I want to go in that door. And you look around on the screen for how to get to the door. And sometimes it takes a couple minutes, especially with the ones that came out before Maniac Mansion. I think the layout for Maniac Mansion was the big thing in reading about it that was kind of the biggest, maybe not the biggest step forward, but as far as the interface and the visually updating this genre, where you just had the screen up top and you had a list of verbs at the bottom, where it made it very simple compared to the previous games. As far as, I want to walk over there. Oh, I click on the word walk to, and I click there, which is extremely intuitive.
You're exactly right. That's the word. It was intuitive.
Yeah.
It was, and it blew everyone else away. This interface was so influential that it did not get retired until the 2000s, I believe.
I think it was 2000, yeah.
Yeah. And then we're talking about the SCUMM engine, S-C-U-M-M.
Which stands for?
Oh, gosh. Let's
I'm looking at it right there.
Script Creation Utility for Maniac Mansion?
Oh, Scripting Utility. But you
Scripting.
Got it.
Yeah, yeah. Scripting Utility.
SC, obviously. Scripting.
Yeah,
I like that. They literally invented for this game. They took over a building. Who is they? I should have had this.
Oh, yeah, Ron Gilbert and Gary Winnick.
Yeah, thank you.
This was Lucasfilm Games.
Oh, yeah. So most of the episodes we talk about won't be a 20-minute history of the game and everything, the engines and the inspiration. They'll get a little bit of that. But this is the first one that used the SCUMM engine, which is the games we're focusing on. We're kind of getting a little deeper into that, and we'll get more into the game, obviously, as we go.
Yeah, absolutely. So David Fox was the guy at Lucasfilm that was doing this.
Right.
Basically tasked with putting together this team, this dream team of people who would be able to make some video games and hopefully not get into too much trouble. Lucas himself didn't have high hopes for them, but wanted them to do something and do something cool. And basically said, yeah, don't lose too much money.
Right.
That was kind of what they had. So
they got, it was Lucasfilm Games. Yeah.
Yeah. Lucasfilm Games. And in fact, Maniac Mansion was the first Lucasfilm game,
yeah,
to be distributed by Lucasfilm.
Right.
The others, they had other companies distribute them. They were not identified necessarily as the developer in a large way. So, this was kind of, their first big hit. So Ron Gilbert and Gary Winnick were the two that really put this game together. If I remember correctly, it was Gilbert who did a lot of the drawings, a lot of the inspiration, and Winnick who did the scripting. I may have that backwards, or it may be that Gilbert did all the scripting. But
I'm not going to help you there.
Thank you. Thank goodness.
Yeah, I'm looking up as you're talking, and I still don't know.
So just as we're talking about the history of LucasArts, we found this great book called Rogue Leaders about the history of LucasArts. So much fun. And one of the things it talks about, or one of the great little artifacts it has in there, is a letter from David Fox as he's coming up with this this new video game company and trying to think, okay, what do we do? What makes us different from everyone else? And he looked at the Star Wars movies and he said, okay, what is it that people connected with? And I love this as an approach. So we've got this memo from him and he says, you know, in these Star Wars movies, one of the things that people really loved is you've got this action, you've got adventure, but you've got the high highs and the low lows, mm-hmm, seemingly insurmountable odds that the characters surmount in really creative ways by just thinking outside the box. And that sets up so perfectly for these adventure games that he's going to make.
The serial style of just like, oh, and they get into trouble again and they get out. And the next week they get into trouble again and they get out.
And when I read that, it made so much more sense in that there are some places in Maniac Mansion that are so frustrating,
mm-hmm,
so unbelievably frustrating. And just a little side note, I took my wife to Star Wars last week. She did not grow up on Star Wars. We've watched them the last few years. She's gotten into them. She likes them. And when we're watching Star Wars, there were some moments, the new Star Wars, where she was freaking out. You know, she was definitely agitated and was like, You got to let me know that this has a happy ending, right? We're going to get there. And I'm going to leave this movie happy. And Star Wars has that feeling to it. You forget that when you watch it as a kid, you're terrified when, you know, 40-year-old spoiler alert, when Obi-Wan dies, it's done. You're so low.
Right.
And you've got to have those low lows. And I think that's one of the things when you get frustrated with these games, that's part of what's happening.
That's a good point.
These games aren't giving you everything you want right away, and then you're going to be a lot more happy when it ends.
Right.
You'll be excited. You'll be proud.
Yeah, that's true. The lows aren't necessarily the storyline, but the frustration or the helplessness.
Yeah.
And maybe stay away from the word frustration just because that I don't want a game where I'm constantly frustrated, even though that happens in these games for sure.
Yeah.
With the puzzles that are just really hard. You have no idea what to do. You're just walking around clicking on the wall for an hour. But hopefully, and I haven't read this, maybe you were explaining that you read this, but Gary and Gil, no, what are their names?
Gary and Ron.
Gary and Ron. Hopefully they built into this, or people that built the future games were thinking about the fact that these frustrating parts would be kind of a metaphor almost for these low lows.
Yeah.
Of the storyline. You know, I mean, the frustrating part is a storyline. And also the part where you do escape the danger, or the part where you do figure out this extremely hard puzzle that's been bothering you for a week, would also be like this rewarding, I don't know, like the climax of a storyline. You know what I mean? That you have these high highs and low lows, just like you were saying.
Yeah,
it happens in your brain while you're playing these games, separately from the storyline.
Yeah, exactly. You want to hear, you want to feel like Han Solo is yelling "Yeehaw!" You know,
exactly.
That's going to get you through it. So,
by the way, you were just talking about the history of them making the game, and
yeah,
originally when Ron and Gary, as we know them, my uncle Ron, cousin Gary. we're talking about the idea behind Maniac Mansion. We can get into the deeper into the game. Deeper into the game. The inspiration was a play on like a funnier kind of B, or a funnier version of these like B level horror movies, like Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, those kind of things, and just kind of like a lighter version of these things, but still playing off that horror genre. And apparently, and this is again in the Rogue Leaders book that we got, which is just a fantastic history of LucasArts. they basically, EA was their funding and distributor partner, distributing partner, and EA just pulled out. They're like, no, that won't sell.
Yeah.
And that's what kind of you talked about it before. That's when Lucasfilm decided, or Lucasfilm Games decided, to publish and distribute the title completely by themselves, because EA told them that they wouldn't help them.
Yeah. Yeah. And the original cut of this, we're not even talking about the one before it got neutered by Nintendo.
Right. Right.
But even before it ever got created, the original cut of this included swearing, included some darker elements than whatever came out. They had to tone it down. And I think I'm glad that they did, because if they'd gone that full dark route, I probably never would have played it.
Yeah.
Never would have been allowed to. Yeah. And these really are all ages games, meaning if you're, you know, in your 30s, you're still going to enjoy it. It's a lot of fun.
Right. Yeah. I mean, a player in this game gets, I assume, gruesomely killed when, you know, you hear the mating call of the, I don't even know what kind of alien they are. The sucker.
The tentacle.
The tentacles. Right.
No, don't worry. They'll have their day.
Of course they will.
Painful.
And all it goes to is, oh, the mating call, and it cuts to your grave.
Yeah.
Which is much funnier, wittier, and just kind of, just a kind of a quick laughable moment, more than showing anything that happened in between those two moments.
Yeah. I never want to watch that.
No.
Whatever
no,
would happen there, no one wants to watch. No, it wouldn't be funny.
No one wants to watch.
But the cutaway is hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. All right. So let's set up Maniac Mansion.
Ready? Yeah.
All right. So that the idea, other than the background, the idea for Maniac Mansion is yours at five in the original, I think, five or six kids.
It's a total of seven, but one of them is chosen for you. It's Dave.
Dave, he's the leader. He's got the
cool Dave and six others.
He's got the cool jean jacket, the Canadian tuxedo, and he's the leader of this kind of roughshod group of every genre of high schooler, I think it
yes,
is.
Yes. Yes.
Right? Got the rock star, the nerd, the surfer, the goth, and Dave.
Yeah.
A couple others. And basically I should have brought the intro, the script, but basically they're like, this is the house where so-and-so got kidnapped. What's her name?
Yeah. Sandy gets kidnapped.
That's who it is.
But what's even weirder is it opens with 20 years ago today.
I love it.
A meteor landed, evidently.
Right. Right. We all remember that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. It was in the news. And so they took Sandy. We don't need to get too much into the plot, just because I probably won't remember all of the random intricacies of Ed and Fred and Edna. Edna.
Yeah.
Wow. Really, guys? Edna and Ed? And all right.
Quick side.
Yeah, please.
Edna, by the way, was based on Gary Winnick's mother.
Of course it was.
So there you go.
Grandma Edna. And they're basically like, hey, Sandy was taken. Let's go get her. Funny little cutscene. And then boom, you're in front of the house and you are tasked with finding Sandy before they do experiments on her. I think that's what they're going to be doing.
Yep.
Taking her brain out or something. Saving Sandy and figuring out all these random puzzles. So I think this isn't a walkthrough. We're not going to go through every single thing you need to do. But you pick Dave and two other characters and you do this. You go through all these puzzles. Maybe we'll touch on a few of our least favorite puzzles.
Yeah. And one quick thing.
Yeah.
Here's something crazy about the game. They really, shot for the moon with it, in that not only were they doing this new intuitive engine, all the stuff we've already talked about, but they also tried to have incredibly nonlinear gameplay,
right,
where you would switch back and forth between characters. So you choose your three characters at the beginning, but each character has a different way of winning the game. And two of the characters have no way of winning the game.
Oh, why, Gary and Ron? Why?
I mean, that's rough.
Yeah.
The funny thing is, this was an improvement on what they considered. They tried to get rid of no-win scenarios, meaning there were lots of games at this time where it would be set up in such a way that from the beginning or from very early on, you just couldn't win the game. You had already screwed up.
Which sounds insane to me.
Yeah. There's a King's Quest where if you pick up a shard of glass, you just die because you cut yourself and it got infected and you die.
Well, yeah, they didn't have penicillin back then.
Right? And it's like, what, I can't pick up a piece of glass? Right. And of course, I should have known that. So that was the other thing they really tried to do away with, is this idea that you wouldn't see your death coming, that it wouldn't be obvious, or at least, some explanation. Like, some of the ones that we explained were at least funny, even if you couldn't see it coming.
Yeah, true. Yeah, yeah. And I think that the whole idea of the nonlinear gameplay, of the fact that you can control three, and it's just F1, F2, F3 on your keyboard, you could cycle anytime you want between all three players, I thought was great. It wasn't like, oh, now it's Dave's turn for a half hour. Now it's Bernard's turn for a half hour. It was, as soon as I figured that out, as soon as the game started, I was just like a sigh of not relief, a sigh of frustration, because I was like, really, I have to play this game three times? Yeah. And it wasn't that. It's not. You have to beat the game three times. It's really like sometimes you press this button and the door opens for 4 seconds. So you're going to want another character by the door so you can get out the door. And it really is more helpful once you get kind of the hang of using all three. I think both of us gave Dave all of the supplies we picked up for the most part and had him do 90% of the work unless you needed another hand or you needed to fix the radio. He doesn't know anything about radios. So you use Bernard, who's the nerd, to fix the radio.
Yep. Yep. I found out I had thought at the time, okay, Razor, she's useless. I can't do anything with her. I'll just use her to press buttons and stuff. It turns out actually Dave is the most useless. He's the one that can't do anything. And Razor had her own thing that I could have done that I could have won the game with if I hadn't screwed up and ripped open an envelope early on in the game and therefore put myself in a dead end.
That's so stupid.
We'll talk about those. There are a few of those left in. The funny thing is I was reading an interview with Ron Gilbert. And he said that they actually tried to eliminate all the dead ends. They wanted that to not be a thing.
Yeah.
The only reason they're there is just because this was the first game they'd made. They didn't know what they were doing. This is an accident.
Yeah. And it's by today's game, especially RPGs and kind of more in-depth games, this is a very, very short game.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just in YouTubing kind of random things after this. You beat the game in 54. There's a 54-minute YouTube video on how to beat the game. I'm fairly sure we could do it in a half hour or less.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't watched that whole hour. But there is, if you pick the right people, there's like one or two things that each player needs to do in order to finish this game.
Yep. Yep.
So it's pretty quick. But at the same time, how much time did you spend on beating this game? When we tried to do the whole thing without walkthroughs, I think each of us cheated one time.
One time.
I cheated
twice. The second time just told me that the game was no longer winnable.
Oh, which is a pretty good cheat to find out rather than spend multiple days on figuring out how to beat this unbeatable game.
But you were asking how long we played.
I didn't time it. We probably should do that next time. But how many hours do you think?
I'd say about 8 hours.
Yeah,
six to eight, something in there.
I'd say 8 to 10 probably. Yeah. Okay. And maybe, it was rough. And I used, we can get into a little specifics and we won't drag this on too long. But when you're in the dungeon,
And let me back up just before we get into that specific. Yeah. You start outside a house. You go into the house to save Sandy.
Yes.
There's lots and lots of rooms.
Right.
And in some of these rooms are the tenants of the house. The Maniac family? Does Dr. Maniac? Fred have a last name?
We should know this maybe, but we didn't find out in the game.
I'm gonna assume it's the Maniac family.
Yeah, definitely.
When you get caught, you get sent to the dungeon.
Yeah. Yeah. Obviously, like most mansions, they have a dungeon.
Sure.
It's not a very big room. It's, a side-scrolling, maybe two-panel room, and there's not a lot in it. There's a skeleton, and there's two doors, and two barred windows.
And one of the doors is marked Secret Lab.
Secret Lab. So you know that that's where you need to go, that that's where Sandy is being held.
You are tantalizingly close.
Right.
You're like, oh my gosh, I think I either died or I just got to the end of the game, and I can't tell which.
Nurse Edna, his wife. So it's the Edison family.
The Edison family.
Dr. Fred.
Thank you.
A mad scientist. Nurse Edna, his lovely wife, and their son, Weird Ed.
Weird Ed Edison.
Right.
Okay.
Obviously. Right. Yeah. Living with the Edisons are two large disembodied tentacles, one purple and the other green.
Green. And their names are Green Tentacle and Purple Tentacle.
Right.
As we will find out in the next game.
Right. Good stuff. Where were we? Oh, yeah. So the dungeon. So inevitably, because you have to get to the secret lab and for other reasons, you run into Ed, Edna, and Krabappel. Who was the other one?
Krabappel, Fred.
Fred. You run into these characters who live in the mansion, and their first instinct is, intruder, I'll put you in the dungeon. And they say funny things. And once you're in the dungeon, you're pretty much stuck in the dungeon. At least I thought for probably 2 hours. I was just kind of in the dungeon, clicking on bricks, clicking on windows. I think I had a flashlight with broken, like with useless batteries in it. What did you try?
Oh, geez. What didn't I try? I wanted to open that skeleton. I really thought there was going to be an extra key inside the skeleton.
Yeah.
And I had to use something on the skeleton. There's also the candelabra above, and you just keep trying to pull from that. And so maybe if I can put the flashlight inside the candle holder, because the flashlight's kind of like a candle.
Right.
Again, I don't know what that's going to do. But it felt like, there's something here.
So spoiler alert, if you're currently playing this game and we've inspired you to go back and download an emulator to play this game, Don't listen right now if you don't want any spoilers. We're going to kind of explain this puzzle. And if you don't care, because it's a lot of work to get these emulators these days for free, then keep listening.
And one last thing before we give the spoiler, you want this spoiler.
It's true. That's a good point.
This, if there is one cheat that you want, it is this cheat. So go right ahead.
I tried to give you like slow hints. So I think I was a day ahead of you on playing this game. We played it a couple hours a day.
Yep.
And you asked me like, do I need to start over after wandering around in this dungeon? And this was a day after I had already cheated. And I was like, no, there's a way out. You have to click on what is, because that's one of the verbs in the bottom. Click on what is and click on the stuff on the wall. And like 10 minutes later, you're like, I've clicked on everything on the wall twice.
Twice.
It's like, twice. Okay, well, once you find the thing, you push a thing and it opens the door. Like, it's that simple.
Yep.
And you're like, okay. And like 20 minutes later, you're texting me back. Like, please give me another hint.
Yeah. I'm done with this game.
Right.
I'm done with LucasArts games. Right. I'm done with video games at this point.
We don't need a podcast. I'll go read them.
Nope.
Yeah.
I just like books. Books don't do this to me.
Right. Right. Oh man. So, what's his name? Danielewski does this.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. So there is a brick under the left barred window that Razor, I always said Razor because I thought she was useless as well. Razor presses that opens the door to the dungeon for about 3 seconds. So you go to Razor, push the brick, you find the brick, then you push the brick, then you switch back to Bernard or Barry or Dave or whoever, and you run out the door before it closes.
Yep.
Into its pitch black room.
Which, again, the what is command, the entire reason for it is so you can hover your mouse over the screen and find different items. So if I move my mouse, I select what is, and then I move it over the candlestick, it'll say, what is candlestick? It's like, oh, okay. This is how you identify things in the room.
Right, right, right.
However, this loose brick doesn't work that way. You actually have to say what is and then click on the loose brick.
Well, that was for all of Maniac Mansion, for me at least, my emulator, that never showed up. You had to click on everything
The wall
to find like a loose panel or to find a key or whatever. And I know later games, Day of the Tentacle, Monkey Island, you just click on what is and then you hover over everything. It's like an old Homestar Runner or Strong Bad Email. Where you're just like, you're waiting for something to pop up to click on.
And that's a big shift, is that from what is to the later games use the verb look at.
Right, right, right.
And one of the nice things there is it gave them a chance for a little bit more humor. So even when you're stuck, even when you're searching around, you can say look at blank and there'll be something funny there.
I think it gives them a chance to make the puzzling. I mean, I guess it gives them a chance to make the puzzles better rather than making just finding out something to do next. That shouldn't be the puzzle in itself.
Right.
You know what I mean? But figuring out that you need to use, what is it? The cheese grater with the palm tree to make, a caber or whatever it is, like in a later Monkey Island game. Like that is much more clever than just like having a piece of wood there and clicking on everything on the screen until you find that piece of wood.
Oh yeah.
So it gives them a chance to just be a little smarter, which is much more rewarding in the end too.
Well, this is a good chance to say, you know, why are we playing this game if we're saying that, you know, it's not great.
I think my note was when I was like, gameplay notes. So bleeping frustrating.
Yes. I'm reading it right here.
Favorite moment besides the end.
Being done.
Exactly.
Me not having to do this anymore.
Keep going. Right. Keep going.
And so two reasons to play this game. One is that, you know, like I said, this really is that moment that games shift. This is where LucasArts starts. This is, you know, this historical moment. But two, it's a setup for our next episode. And that's Day of the Tentacle, which again, like I said, was the game that really meant the most to us growing up that we played through. We're going to devote a little bit more time to Day of the Tentacle, but I think it's going to be a lot more rewarding.
Yeah. I mean, and like we said before, this game is pretty short compared to most video games and also just compared to most scum games. This is the first one. This is much shorter than any of the Monkey Islands, any of the Day of the Tentacle, I guess there's one Day of the Tentacle, any of the other future games. I mean, it might be multiple episodes we do on future games or like an intro over, you know, kind of an overview episode, and then like two or three follow-up episodes or something like that, just because the games are so long.
Yeah.
If no one ever downloads those ones and we hate doing them, then we might just do a half hour per game or something like that.
Yeah. No, what I just said, what Purple Tentacle says to you when he finds out that you're a member of the Meteor Police.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty straightforward.
Yep. Yeah. We can get into these. I mean, I think the only one that I just didn't fill a lot of them out, but the only one that I, I think the loose brick in the dungeon was the most difficult, easily for, for both of us. Yeah. But the, maybe the most frustrating part of the whole game, and maybe not frustrating because it, I wasn't like a constant frustration, but something that I wish I'd known going in was that was do less. Like I was just going in there. My overall strategy, I think, was with yours and in most of these scum games with these kind of puzzles running everything is go into every room, collect every single thing and talk to every single person and talk to them about every possible option you can. Cause sometimes I remember there's like Monkey Island 2 or something like that, where whoever's running the cabana, you have to ask him, hey, can I have a towel? And that fifth time you ask him, he's like, fine, here's a towel or something. Yep. I mean, it's, so it's
whereas in this game,
picking everything up. Yeah.
In this game, the fifth time you do something, you're no longer allowed to win the game.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Are you sure you want to open that envelope? Why not? Oh, a quarter.
You sure you want to call the media police again? Are you super sure? Cause you don't get to win anymore. You're done.
The time I did call them at the very end, they were just like, all right, I'll come back one more time. This is
Oh my gosh.
Cause I'd already called them five times. So at the end we can get to the storyline.
Yeah.
Once you've opened the gate to the or the door to the secret lab, you figured out how to, all you really need to do is get a glowing key. Once you figured out how to get the glowing key, you unlock the secret lab and then you call the space police. I think it's all they're called, right? The space police, who are in the middle of pulling over someone on the moon or Mars or something. And they come down, and if the door isn't open, the door to the secret lab, they say, the door to the secret lab isn't open. I'll come back later.
Yep.
Or I think they said, like, let's go get them. Oh, the door's closed. Never mind.
Call me when you get this door open.
Right, right. So if you keep calling them back, like both of us did, they end up just stop. They don't, like the real police, maybe.
Yeah.
If you keep calling them, I mean, they just, anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah, eventually they do show up. They go through the door. They get Ed or whatever. What are they? Oh, they beam the tentacle away? Is that all they do?
So yeah, they beam the meteor away.
The meteor, thank you. Oh gosh, I can't even remember the end.
And remember, the meteor is somehow controlling Fred's brain.
Right, right, right. This meteor, yeah, exactly. It was running the whole house. It was running Ed, Fred, and Fred is the guy, right?
Fred is the guy. Weird Ed is the son.
Weird Ed is the son. Yeah. So he's running that, and basically, what is the whole plot? Where they're trying to? They have a nuclear reactor in their basement that's being cooled by the pool.
Yep.
And do we know what their overall plot is?
The meteor made him. Make some kind of machine. And I think the machine is now controlling his brain because he doesn't stop being crazy until you turn off the machine.
Yeah.
He wants to steal Sandy's brain.
Thank you.
And turn her into a zombie. Sure. And I think the meteor can be inside Sandy's head then as her brain.
All right.
I don't know.
Sure. So I think the reason that we both picked, so a weird thing, you can pick what, six or seven players we said.
Yeah,
we both picked, you have to pick Dave, we both picked Bernard and Razor. I don't know why we both picked Razor. We both picked Bernard, maybe for two reasons. One is, oh, he's the nerd. He has glasses and his little bio says he can fix electronics. And we're like, obviously you need the smart kid. And I think the second reason might be because we played Day of the Tentacle so much. Bernard's the main character.
Yeah.
And well, so we,
one of three.
One of three, but I still remember playing as Bernard more than anyone else.
I agree.
And
I
he's
agree.
The cover. He's the main person on the cover of Day of the Tentacle. But I mean, we probably should have used him more than we used Dave. We just didn't realize it. He's the one that can get stuff done.
Bernard gets stuff done.
It's true. This is true.
Okay. So I think we're putting together a rap album, by the way, and Bernard Gets Stuff Done is one of the tracks. I think Clicking on Bricks. You said that earlier. I think that's another track right there.
Clicking on Bricks, man.
Clicking on bricks. Bricks.
Yeah. Call the space police.
Space police don't answer.
Maybe F the space police.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
911 don't come to my neighborhood. Right. Space 911.
Fifth time I called the space police, they didn't show up.
Oh man, this is gonna be a good album. I can tell.
This is there. I'm done with it already.
I can tell.
So yeah, getting back to the doing nothing, and we don't have to belabor this too long. I felt like I had at one point I had seven keys. The silver key, the key card, the glowing key, the small key, a key, just a key. And a silver key. So that's six keys.
Oh, don't forget about the yellow key.
I might have said the yellow key. I don't remember. I had a lot of keys. And I think just as many things that wouldn't open that whenever I said, open this with a key, it said, I don't have the right key. I think I only ended up needing one of those locked things.
Yeah.
That was the most frustrating. Where I was 80% of the way done with the game and thought I was 10% done.
Yeah.
And I think I have so many more keys to find.
I think this is one of those in jokes for games too, especially because at the time in every game you would have the silver key, the gold key, the bronze key, right? Or the red key, the blue key, the green key. The fun thing they're doing is they're just completely throwing out parallelism. So, you know, you've got your yellow key and then you've got a glowing key and then you've got a small key. You're like, wait, wait, shouldn't it just be three keys, yellow, red, and blue? Something simple and straightforward? No,
no, no, no. That's silly. Yeah, I mean, it's true. Yeah, it's getting rid of the linear gameplay. It's getting rid of the – I mean, it's a little more realistic to have a pocket full of keys, and you don't need all the keys. Like, not every key has a door that's going to unlock it. So, it's fine. I'm okay with it. It was just frustrating because I had no idea how to open these doors, and I don't even know if all those doors are supposed to be opened.
Yeah. So we'll set up the next episode for you. What we'd like you to do, though, is actually try and play through Day of the Tentacle. Before we talk about the next one, aren't you? Yeah, I am.
So by Wednesday at 3 o'clock, I need to email Jason your full review.
and the reason for that is I just think you're going to enjoy this a lot more if you have.
Yes.
We're probably going to break it up into different segments. Day of the Tentacle breaks up nicely. So we'll give you some advice about that before the next episode drops. Don't worry.
Yeah. And we'd love to put these out once a week, but we both have wives and kids and jobs. So we're going to try to do once a month. We'll get these out there. If they're terrible, then we'll do less than that. So we'll see. Hopefully you guys enjoyed the first episode. I will go through and edit this, so hopefully it makes a little more sense than it currently does. But we will be doing – are we doing Day of the Tentacle next for sure?
Well, nothing is sure. Nothing is sure.
I like that. Eventually, one of the next three episodes will be Day of the Tentacle. We want to hit on Monkey Island, and there are a lot of – Spielbergian games as well, a lot of Star Wars games, so a lot of fun ones coming up. But we wanted to start with Maniac Mansion because that was kind of the original Scum game that we both had a lot of fond memories of.
You know, I got a question for you before we get on to this thing.
I want to ask you, this isn't gonna be a regular thing, but just as we're getting ready to do this podcast, what are two games, maybe one that you're most excited to play and one that you're not so excited to play, maybe one you're almost scared of playing?
Scared and excited. I would say I am probably most scared to play Rebel Assault because I still have fever dreams of that trench on Tatooine, and everything's just coming so fast, and I'm driving down with the whatever ship that is, the A-Wing or whatever, the TI-84, or that's a calculator, isn't it? Whatever that wing is. T-51. Smoking some swamp rats or whatever. It's been a while, okay? It just looks like the most terrifying and frustrating thing.
So when you were smoking swamp rats in the T-51 Fever Dream Trench, did I get all that right?
Yes. Yep, that's what happened in the game. I'm sure it'll be much easier than I remember because I just remember it being impossible. I just remember exploding into the side of that little valley hundreds of times and giving up. I think that's the first level, too, so I'm not excited to play that. I'm sure we'll play it in a few months, and it'll be great, hopefully. And the game I'm probably most excited for and have the most fond memories of LucasArts games is Sam & Max. I know it's not a game about a guy named Max who loves fish, but it's a game about Sam and Max, a rabbit and a dog. Is that what he is? Yeah. Max is a dog, right?
Yeah.
Or Sam's a dog. Wow, it's been a while. But that's another game that I have not beaten, another LucasArts game that I have not beaten, but I have so many fond memories of playing the first 4 or 5 hours of that, that I'm sure we could get to a point where we, you know, the same point we get to every time we play it. That I got to in elementary school and middle school and high school when I played the game, where I found the big ball of yarn and I found the alligator golfing place, and I don't think I got any further than that. So it might be a while till we play the Sam & Max episode because it might take me a while to get through it, but I'm excited for that one. What about you?
Mine is one game I'm excited about and I'm scared about. It's Loom. Loom was a game that came out just before Day of the Tentacle. It came out in the early 90s. And so in most of these adventure games, it's like look at door, open door, closed door, that kind of thing. If I remember right, in Loom, you just play music the whole time. And the notes that you play do magic spells that make stuff happen. And I remember the art being really, really cool. I just pulled up some images from it, and it looks crazy, like a crazy person made it. And so I am scared of it, and yet I also know a lot of people who've talked about loving Loom and thinking it's like such an awesome game. So I'm excited about the idea of being someone who actually liked playing Loom.
Okay.
I feel like you can come out the other side of it a different person.
Yeah, just screenshot. I've never played that, but screenshots, it looks terrifying. Like, it looks like the first attempt at Rock Band or Guitar Hero. And yeah. They're like, no, let's not do that. Let's not. Let's just leave that alone for 15 more years and we'll try it again.
Fail.
Yeah, we're done. So we talked about a lot of the characters, the fact that you can pick all these different characters. But there's one character that we haven't really talked a lot about yet. Are you ready?
Oh, yeah.
Chuck is a plan, but he's so much more than that. I said Chuck's not only a plan, he's an NPC in Champ.
He really is. He is a non-playable characterine champ.
Yes.
Chuck the plan is. And hopefully you saw him in the den or the library, whatever that room is called. But if you did, even if you didn't, we're going to keep talking. So if you did, Jason and I actually found out recently kind of how he even got there in that room, just hanging out, not being able to do anything to help you out. And Jay, do you want to go first and kind of explain how we got there?
Yeah. No worries. We did our research independently, so I'm sure everything will check out. But
right. Or, well, yeah. Fact check each other.
Yeah. We can look into it. Well, what you got to remember is, you know, we've got Dr. Fred, but he's not really an evil guy. The meteor is controlling his mind. So this is probably about 5 years before the events in Maniac Mansion. Chuck was a local high school kid. He's actually a friend of Bernard's older brother, but that's not really a big deal. Anyway, Chuck went into the mansion on a dare, and Dr. Fred was trying out this new kind of vegetable ray. Okay, so Weird Ed yells intruder, and then Dr. Fred gets scared, and the meteor's controlling his mind, and shoots Chuck. And Chuck became a plant. So that's the secret behind his origin. That's where his powers come from, his planty powers. I think he also he looks nice there. He fits. And so I think it worked out. It's got a little bit of a happy ending.
He completes kind of he balances the shelf aesthetically, if you will.
He really pulls the room
together. Completes
the
look. He does. Actually, I'm surprised that you said that, because the stuff that I found out is a little different than what you said. I'll just kind of give you the whole story, and you can kind of let me know where it differs. But
sure, yeah.
I was actually out at the local grocery mart last week, browsing just some normal periodicals, looking for the best sex, best diet, that kind of stuff. When I came upon an ancient manuscript, it wasn't an ancient manuscript hanging out in the grocery store. It was actually a primitive stone rubbing onto papyrus made from birch bark of an ancient manuscript, but still, that told of a half-plant, half-god who would someday come to a planet and rule it with a furious vengeance for 1,000 years, yada, 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 and that his second cousin, Chuck the Plant, would actually come to our planet and rule it mercifully for about 10 to 12 years. So somewhere in the 10 to 12 years is kind of where Maniac Mansion, I think, lies, somewhere in that timeline.
I don't see any conflicts at all. Checks out to me.
No. Lines up to me.
Yeah.
All right.
This game's pretty fun. You with frustration. When I was all done, I just had two questions. What's the beer? What's the song? I can't always tell. I just wanna know. What game is West D12?
The song said it all, but we have two questions. I have two questions for you. What's the beer? What's the song? If you had to pick one beer that represented Maniac Mansion and one song out of all of the songs in the world or of other worlds, what song would best represent Maniac Mansion to you?
Yeah, so my beer, I went simple. I think the game's simple, so it works out in that way. But nice. Something that's also influenced my life a lot, and that's Smittix. You can get it at any Irish pub and most regular bars. It tastes good. It's a much better alternative than Guinness or Budweiser or anything else you can find just about everywhere. Smittix is my standby. And so it's simple. There's nothing too special about it, and yet it's part of my life, and it shapes my decisions, typically for ill. and so I think that fits Maniac Mansion.
Plus, you can take half a Smittix and half of Guinness and make a black and white.
That's true.
Is that what it's called?
Black and tan?
Black and tan, thank you. And it's just delicious as hell.
It's
so
nice. It's pronounced Smittix. It's spelled Smith Wicks, which is exactly like Maniac Mansion. I'm sorry, exactly like Manicamil.
Right, McMaglin. My beer is a little little more rare than Smittick's, that you can find it at any Safeway. This one, I believe it's one of those beers that comes out once a year. Pretty hard to find. Someone posted a picture of it a couple weeks ago on my Instagram beer account that I follow. And it just, as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, that's Maniac Mansion in a glass. And that is Surly Brewing's Darkness, which I've never even had. Have you had this?
I have.
Oh, my gosh. I think you told me about it a couple years ago when you had it. But it's really dark. This is, you know, based off of those B-movies in the 80s, those horror movies, so horror films. So it's dark, a bit esoteric, but also new, kind of just at the forefront of everything that's changing about video games. This is at the forefront of kind of the new beer revolution we've been in the past 5 or 6 years. If you've seen the cover or the label to the Darkness, feel free to Google or Bing or Yahoo or Jeeves.
Sure.
Surly Brewing's Darkness. And you'll see the label is just basically just horror films. A cartoon form, but still creepy as hell. And just also, just like Maniac Mansion, very worth it to find this kind of rare beauty.
Sweet.
What's the song, man?
All right, the song, I'll play it for you in a second. Man, how to preface this one. I think it just meets the spirit of Maniac Mansion, but you know what? I'll let the song speak for itself, or should I say herself.
Ooh.
In this Weird Al Yankovic, Everything You Know Is Wrong.
Uh-oh.
I was driving on the freeway in the fast lane with a rabid Wolverine in my underwear when suddenly...
So why'd you pick this song?
I picked it because it's stupid and funny. because it was something I thought was hilarious when I was 12, and that's Maniac right. Mansion for me.
All right.
The humor just matches perfectly. And it's a parody, not of a particular song, but of a style. And I don't know, in a little bit you heard, can you guess what band is being parodied?
Devo.
You're close. No, you're not.
Oh, I heard a lot of synth in there, so. Yeah.
They might be Giants.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Okay, I totally hear that now.
I think it lines up.
A lot of keyboard. A
lot of keyboard. And so it's representative of something I love even more. I like Weird Al just fine, but I love They Might Be Giants. I like Maniac Mansion just fine, but I love Day of the Tentacle.
All right, well, my song is also a little older, just kind of like Maniac Mansion. And let me just play it for you a little bit.
Now, here's a little story I got to tell about three bad brothers you know so well. It started way back in history with that Rob C.A.
All right, so this one, probably pretty obvious. So whenever Jason and I go on road trips or backpacking trips or whatever, we usually end up singing this at least a dozen times a day and just annoying the hell out of our dad. And it's great.
It's
Everyone
true.
Loves it so except true. For my dad. We all love it except for my dad. So this is Paul Revere by Beastie Boys off of, I think, the 1984 License to Ill. Which actually came out before this game did. And it's, you know, just like Maniac Mansion. It's about three friends that go on a trip together. It's basically a great summary of that song. And it's just, to me, it's just nostalgic, another 80s classic. And yeah, to me, it just reminds me of the 80s, just like Maniac Mansion does.
Sounds awesome.
So yeah, what do we got next? I think we're done with Maniac Mansion. Anything else to cover?
That's all I got.
All right, well, next episode, which might be a month from now, a week from now, whenever it is.
A year from now, who knows?
A year, whenever we release them, is going to be covering actually the sequel. So our first two episodes are going to be the first two and last two Maniac Mansion games by LucasArts. Any other kind of teases for Day of the Tentacle?
The last two for now. I mean, there's nothing to say there can't be more in the future, right?
Ooh, nice. Good call, good call.
But yeah, gosh, this game is just so much fun.
Yeah.
Go play it. Play it through before the next episode. Yep. Don't bother listening to the next episode until you've played it. It's too much fun to skip. And this is, we chose this one to have it early on so that people would stick with this podcast, so that people would want to play along. We chose one of our favorite games so that you would play it and say, oh, okay, I got to keep doing this. So it's worth it. We're going to throw one of these out at you about every month and keep playing along with them. That should be about a good pace. Enjoy. But Day of the Tentacle is just a masterpiece.
Yeah, I think that just about does it for Maniac Mansion. Hopefully, if you've made it this far, you're still interested. And you can follow us on Twitter at MOLMFpod. And our email is MOLMFpod@gmail.com. And our website is menoflowmoralfiber.com. Thank you so much for listening. And we look forward to putting more of these out soon. I have been Ben.
I will be Jason.
And I am a mighty pirate.
Don't be a tuna head.
All right. See y'all next time.